Good evening, St. Lawrence, and welcome to Hill News Radio on KSLU. I'm Bobby Baird.
And I'm Joey Duggan.
Here's tonight's news. I'm going to be talking to Jack Lyons about ice hockey.
And I'll be talking to Travis Hamry about his opinion on divestment.
And then we're going to close off the show with Gabe Warner, who's an activist. And he's going to tell us a bit about Purple Week and what his role has been and all of his experience there. So we're going to go straight to Jack. Jack, tell us about ice hockey. What's going on this week?
All right. So I guess we'll start with sort of a recap of what happened last weekend. Both teams are in action. The women played a Thursday and Friday home-and-home set with UVM, and they picked up their first two wins of the season against the Catamounts. They shut out UVM 4-0 on Thursday in Burlington, and they came back and held on to win 3-2 over the Catamounts on Friday. And the guys last week went on the road for the first time. They played a set of out-of-conference games against Hockey East opponents, UNH, on Friday, because they beat 3-2 in overtime, thanks to Christian Horn's goal. And then on Saturday, they dropped their first game of the year, 3-1, to Merrimack. And then they'll both be in action this week, or this weekend. The women have an alumni game at 12:30, where we'll get to see a whole bunch of the players return from past squads and play sort of a friendly alumni game. And then the women will host Syracuse at 3 o'clock. And that's an interesting game because that will be one of the first returns for Syracuse head coach Paul Flanagan, who was the head coach at St. Lawrence before our current head coach Chris Wells. And Flanagan left St. Lawrence to begin the program at Syracuse.
So do you think that'll give him a big advantage playing us? Like, he knows our playbook, or have we changed?
I can't see it being much of an advantage. He's been there for 8-9 years now, so there's, you know, whatever program St. Lawrence was when he was here, it's completely different under Chris.
And not to mention the players are probably very responsible for performance. So the girls have been playing well.
Yeah, they had a tough start to the year. They started 0-5-1, but, you know, those games were against really good opponents. They were against Northeastern to start, who they split 0-1-1. They lost in a tie. And then they went on the road to BC, who's ranked number 2 in the nation. They played Clarkson next. They played Clarkson in a home-and-home, and Clarkson is 4th in the nation. And then they went on the road and played Boston College, who's number 2 in the nation.
So where do we rank right now?
We're not currently ranked, which is not much of a surprise. You know, there's only 10 teams that get ranked in women's hockey, unlike you'll get 20 in the men's, but only 10 in the women's. And there's a lot more talent in women's hockey now compared to 5 to 10 years ago. So it's not all that much of a surprise, especially with a fairly young team.
So we'll look forward to a ranking later in the season.
We could.
At some point. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. Only 10.
You know, don't expect them to be number 1 in the country, but they certainly have the talent to be, you know,
on that list at least.
Not top of the pack, but, you know, 4th or 5th in the ECAC, definitely good enough to get themselves into the playoffs.
All right. So let's talk about the guys.
The guys had a great start to the year. For those of you who were lucky enough to witness them, their opening weekend against RIT and Niagara, they won those games quite handily by a score of 10-3. And in those 10 goals, they had 9 different goal scorers, which is something that Coach Carville talked about a lot in the preseason was going to be a strength of the team, was their depth, and it certainly has shown of late. And now they have 14 goals on the year after the 3-2 win at UNH.
Wow.
And the 3-1 loss at Merrimack, and 10 different goal scorers. Christian Horn leads the team with 3, and I believe the next is Brian Ward with 2.
Is Woody on that list? Woody's got to be on that list.
Goal.
Yeah.
Woody's got 1 goal, yep. Woody's got 1 hole and a whole lot of hits. So,
yeah, no, he's
game.
He
likes to throw around his body, for good reason.
So great. Are we, if we're looking at the guys' squad, we're a pretty well-balanced team, or are we better on offense,
we're better
on defense?
We're incredibly well-balanced, actually.
Oh, that's great.
You know, we just talked about the depth of the team, of all the skaters who've played at least a game this year. I believe there have been 19 different skaters. You know, some have been in and out of the lineup. Only 3 of them haven't recorded a point yet this year.
And one of them is the goalie, right?
Well, no, because that's goalie is different. But
he's different, okay.
Actually, might only, technically, yeah, 3. It's only two, only Ross McMullen and Mike.
Sure, it won't be long until he skates up the ice,
you know, yeah. Kyle's a good goalie. He's a great goalie, and that's what makes St. Lawrence, you know, that's what allows them to play the kind of style of play that they like to play, is that they have such a good goaltender backing them up. Kyle is preseason Ken Dryden Award winner list, which is the best goalie in the ECAC, and also a preseason pick for the Mike Richter goalie award, which is the best goalie in the nation.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he earned a whole bunch of first and second team preseason honors. He is one of the best goalies in college hockey, and he allows St. Lawrence to be aggressive and sort of play to the strengths of their forwards and defensemen, defensemen like Gavin Bayreuther and Eric Sweetman, who like to move the puck, who like to get up in the play and make things happen offensively. And they're also all the forwards and all the defensemen are very skilled defensively, and they're very defensively aware. And that it makes St. Lawrence a really hard team to play against, which is why we're currently 17th in the nation.
The Saints, undefeated. I'll be there. Mm-hmm. Joey, you gonna make it out one of the games?
I might just make an appearance.
You might just make an appearance.
They're facing off against the 15th ranked team in the country right now, Miami of Ohio, who's a very similar team to St. Lawrence, actually. So it's going to be really up-tempo, really fast, and really entertaining hockey, for sure.
They'll be hitting hard. We'll be sure to make that. Jack, thanks so much for talking with us again.
Of course, no problem.
We're going to cut to some music right now.
This song is called Immediately Alone by Hamilton Lifehouser.
That was Joe. Who was that?
That was Hamilton Lifehouser, formerly of the Walkmen.
Of the Walkmen, okay.
He recently came out with an EP that was featured on NPR's All Songs Considered, and that song made it to the highlight. So
wow,
yeah,
good for that. All right, so who have we got here?
This is Travis Hamry, and he's recently written an opinion piece for the Hill News about his opinion on divestment. Now, Travis, how did you come up with your opinion on divestment? How did you get involved?
Well, you see, I've seen a lot of, you know, the divestment club has definitely put a lot of stuff out there, and there's been this big student movement, so I decided to do some research myself, because I was skeptical on the effectiveness when it comes to, you know, trying to reduce, you know, the effects of climate change, especially with, you know, oil companies being the main target of the divestment movement. And what I found is really, my opinion is that, you know, this more symbolic, we're spending a lot of time trying to do this symbolic shift of our investments and our endowment, mostly to try to maintain an ethical purity of not looking hypocritical based on calling ourselves a green campus. But what I argue is we should really be focusing on, you know, this campus has done a great job. Recently it was announced our electricity is going to be 100% green by 2016. I think movements towards more of actual direct buying of green infrastructure is going to do more to impact oil companies and fossil fuel companies than just trying to pull out of our fossil fuel investments. Because really, it's going to divest out of our fossil fuel investments, I say in the article, is a lot more difficult than I think some students think. If students, after reading my article, still believe that divestment is the route to go, I mean, I'm all for that. I think students should be more aware of how complicated it would be, because most of the fossil fuel stocks are within these massive funds with hundreds of other companies that aren't fossil fuels. So really, we would have to find there's a limited range of mutual funds and hedge funds that don't have fossil fuels, because these fossil fuels only encompass about 4 to 5% of each of these funds. So we don't have a huge amount invested in these fossil fuel companies.
Now, you use words like skepticism in your article and talking to you now. What makes you so skeptical about the possibility of divestment and, as you put it, the symbolism that it represents?
Well, I think students have the misunderstanding that divestment would cause a direct financial impact on these oil companies. After we would sell these stocks, it's believed that oil companies would be financially impacted. But really, if you look at organizations like 350.org, which is what the divestment club goes through, or the main organization they get their information from, it's really about trying to maintain an ethical standard when it comes to maintaining a green campus. But my counter argument to that is it's not really oil companies that just are producing these pollutants. We use our cars every day, we use electricity. Those companies, they're contributing to climate change as well, because they're burning off these fossil fuels. So I think to make an investment strategy based on purely green ethical standards would be unrealistic right now. But I do write in the article how in the future, as these fossil fuels will become less of an attractive investment, these fund managers who are managing all these funds will start to pull out of fossil fuels anyway. So over time, there will be a natural divestment. I called my article Divestment Through Natural Causes. So my argument is really more direct student intervention and pressure on the board isn't necessary for this to happen.
What fascinates me about your article, often when reading the Hill News, we find the opinion page is broken down between conservative and liberal opinion, whereas you have this spotlight article about divestment and you have the chance to show everyone on campus your opinion. And you're not taking a liberal or a conservative approach, you're taking a pragmatic approach, which not only relates to the entire student body, but lays out a logical argument without ideological spin-off.
Yeah, when I write an opinion article, I don't like to make it either, have a certain political spin to it. I like to look at issues more in a pragmatic way of how are we going to get things done in the most efficient way. I'm a guy that likes to get things done efficiently, and I think that's what frustrates a lot of people about, the political process is people do it more at an ideological standpoint when a lot of Americans would like things done pragmatically. So I think it's good to, give a fresh view, a pragmatic view when it comes to some of these issues, so people can start to realize that maybe some of these issues need to be tackled more in a pragmatic, efficient way of having, a good debate of how are we going to solve this in the best way possible. There will be compromises that, need to happen, but, we want to get to this goal, and we shouldn't let, stubbornness in our ideology prevent us from accomplishing our goals.
So you're all about cutting through the red tape and getting things done.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's refreshing.
We can all get down with that, I think.
Yeah.
One final question. We've talked a lot about what your paper, what your paper contains, but what I really want to know is how does it feel to have this very edgy opinion placed right on the front of the front page of the news that everyone at St. Lawrence is going to be reading?
Well, you know, what was funny is I, you know, never thought coming into this year that I'd even be writing for the Hill News, and I just had my first idea for an article was surrounding the Alabama sorority controversy, and I talked to one of the opinion editors, Cindy Falone, and she said, you know, she's like, oh, yeah, you know, write this article, like, you know, we'll get you on the email list, and then I'm on the email list, and, you know, I was suddenly hooked after writing that first article, so, you know, I kept writing articles, and I fell in love with it, so, and then she came up to me and told me, like, well, we won't be, originally I thought this article was going to go in last week's issue, but she's like, well, I think we need to move it to next week, but it will be front page, and I couldn't believe it, because I never thought that, you know, I haven't really been much of a writer most of my life, so, you know, if you were to tell me I'd be on the front page of a student newspaper a few years ago, I wouldn't believe you. So it's interesting how, you know, if any student at St. Lawrence, if you branch out, take the initiative to do, you know, something on campus, great things can happen.
Travis's article will be the first opinion ever featured on the Hill News front page. Be sure to check it out this week, and thank you so much, Travis, for talking to us.
Thank you.
Travis, I'm just curious, what's next, article-wise?
Ooh, what's next? I've had a couple bye weeks. You know, I've been trying to think of a new article. I've been trying to think of more of a lifestyle spin.
Yeah.
Based on lifestyle. I don't know quite yet. It might be more of a, you know, I've been thinking a while about doing an article surrounding image base or authenticity.
Yeah, definitely.
That could be my next direction, but who knows? We'll see.
We'll see. Thanks so much, Travis.
Thank you.
is worthless, and I soaked it in. So, Joe, who was that?
That was Peter Bourne and John with Objects of My Affection.
All right, so I'm here with Gabe Warner. Now, Gabe, I guess I'll give our listeners here a little bit of background. I was walking through the student center the other day and looking for, you know, someone to talk to. I've been a little late to the game. It was Wednesday, right? Wednesday I saw you in the student center?
Yep, that was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday? Okay, so I was walking through the student center and here's Gabe at this table. He's got a bunch of wristbands out that say, I'm not wearing mine, it says SLU Pride, right?
Yep.
And I go up to Gabe, I'm like, Gabe, I didn't know you were involved in Advocates.
Yeah, I'm actually not really involved in Advocates. I work alongside them every now and then, this week especially, because it's Purple Week.
Yeah.
So,
so it's just fascinating. So what drives you to be, like, you're not an advocate, you're an activist.
Yeah. Well, what drives me is really I just want other people to be able to live the life they want and not really have to worry about the issues that higher-ups have to deal with and basically the psyche that people have, that the people doing the wrongs have. I want to work to end that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Okay. It does. So you choose to kind of operate independently outside of Advocates, in a sense, am I?
Yeah. Well, I haven't really had time to go to the Advocates meetings very much, and I haven't had the time to get trained yet, but I take my own personal experiences and my own knowledge of the sorts to help people that come to me because I made it well known that I was a source of help for anybody who wanted. So yesterday was Carry That Weight, which deals with Emma, the student from
Columbia. I saw you carrying around, it was a giant mattress, right?
Yep, with End Rape taped on it, which made a lot of people really shocked. Last year we had a few people carry around mattresses. I was one of them. This year I was the only one carrying a mattress. There were a lot of people carrying pillows and stuff. Not everybody can lug around the huge mattresses they give us in our dorms.
It's tough to do, but
the mattress looked sort of heavy when you walked through the library with it.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy. After a day of balancing it on your head, your neck gets a little sore. You know how that goes. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I can hardly sleep on mine now. So tell me about this bracelet, SLU Pride, that you were handing out. How did you get it? Like, what's the...
So the SLU Pride bracelet originated last year during our Pride Week, second semester. We tried to do a Pride Week for LGBTQ, etc. people, just to basically show that we support, I mean, obviously I support, but that the campus supports. We did events. We had people come in and talk to us about it. We had a tie-dye day out on the quad. I don't know if anybody saw us, right outside the student center.
I think I did, yeah.
A lot of people saw us, actually. So we tie-dyed a bunch of shirts, socks, ties, whatever people brought in, and that was a huge hit. We did a bunch of other stuff. We had, I don't know, a bunch of speakers come in. It was a great week. It was cool.
So you were distributing these bracelets, and you were also talking about asexuality. How do you feel this relates to Purple Week?
Well, Asexuality Awareness Week is actually also this week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The special color for asexuality is purple.
Oh,
it's
okay.
One of the colors on the asexual pride flag. And so I've been tabling in the student center all week with Saga and other members, just trying to bring around awareness and show people that not everybody really is sexually attracted to other people, which for me was a crazy concept to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, no, I can hardly.
I couldn't imagine it. But through doing research and everything, it was really interesting to see, and I feel like in one way it would make life a bit easier not worrying about
Girls, guys,
whoever. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting.
End cooties today.
Yeah,
end cooties today. So Gabe, we're looking at kind of like a Purple Week, an unrelated Purple Week.
Yeah.
Not related at all.
No, not related, but
okay.
Definitely important.
Definitely important. Yeah. So everyone, look out for Gabe in the student center. or around campus, you know, he's just a guy to talk to. You know, if you have anything, you know, you want to get off your chest, go talk to Gabe. He's a nice guy.
Gabe, I had the honor of hearing you speak the other night. And I just wanted to say on behalf of, you know, the entire student body, if I can be so audacious, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think I stand for everyone when I say that that couldn't have been easy, and everyone appreciates you coming clean, or I'm sorry, not coming clean, coming to that event and being able to be so honest with everybody. So thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. I thank the Women's Resource Center, or the Dub, and the Advocates for giving me the opportunity to. I got to speak last semester as well.
This was Take Back the Night?
Take Back the Night,
okay.
Yeah. It was really powerful, and I was apparently the first male speaker they've ever had last year. So I thought that was really empowering. I really wanted to speak to show other males that they don't have to be afraid of the stigma around sexual assault and the thought that it can't happen, because it can happen to anybody.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So what is Take Back? I've never been. I always have SLU funk at that time, so I'm never ever too attended, but could you tell me about Take Back the Night? Like, walk me through...
Yeah. Take Back the Night is basically a chance for survivors of sexual assault, any area on that spectrum, to basically take back their night, tell their story, own what happened, basically come to terms with it in many cases, and just in a safe space, talk to a crowd of people, feel accepted, finally just get that burden off your chest. You no longer have to hide what you've been hiding for so long in many cases, and it's really powerful. You get to meet a lot of amazing people. Afterwards, there's a safe space talk, like this speak out type thing, where other people who maybe didn't want to speak in front of that huge crowd get to tell their stories if they feel comfortable, or come hear other people talk about it. It's just a really empowering moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and I understand this is mostly victims of sexual assault talking about it? Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing to keep in mind about Take Back the Night, it isn't easy to be in the audience, and it isn't easy to share your story, but Gabe keeps mentioning the word powerful. And when you're in that audience, and when you're, I assume, at that podium, breaking through that barrier is empowering, and it's important that people understand that they have situations like Take Back the Night where they can share their story and learn from each other's lives and feel like they're part of such a community.
Yeah, most definitely. It's definitely powerful. My first semester, I was in the audience and I was struck to my deepest core, and I was like, wow, I can do this. And then I did it in my FYP for our final speech, and that's what, like, warmed me up to talk second semester and again this semester. And I'll keep talking as long as they'll have me, and hopefully until, I mean, not hopefully, but until another male can tell their story.
Well, let's hope you've inspired some guys to go up and
I
talk.
Really hope so.
Because I think that it's, There definitely is this stigma that, you know, guys aren't usually seen as the victims, but I don't know what the statistic is, but it's higher than we'd assume, right?
It's 1 in 3 females in their life will be the victims or attempted victims of sexual assault, and 1 in 6 males.
See, that's, like, so much higher than you'd think, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, good on you, Gabe.
Yeah,
thank you. All right, so that was Gabe Warner talking to us about both Purple Weeks, not only a Purple Week for asexual awareness, but telling us a bit about Take Back the Night. We're going to cut to some music now as we close off the show, but stick around. We got one more thing for you. Choo.
Ten damn days. And all I got to show for it is shoes and shows and chauffeurs with road rage. So the same damn ad lib, always. Still got to let him in, no practice. Still got to burn him in, no lacking. Still a lot of jams, nigga, no Jackson. No Jordan, we toe tagging. I take it to the land where the lake made of sand. And the milk don't pour and the honey don't dance. And the money ain't yours, that's just a red pill. Got a I'm the new Nitty. Fuck it, Nitty the old me. So I'ma tell the buyer what Nitty told me. Yeah. I got that I got that goddamn. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man. Pimp slapping, toe tagging. I'm just trying to fight the man. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man.
I got that.
Sometimes see my face in the streets, in the tweets, in the Rita or the red eye if you read sometimes. She got blisters on her knees, she a fiend for the D, even though I only beat one time. One time, it was one, two times, it was two, bless me, it was three sometimes. Shouts out to Nate, I jack ball and I bop, I flex. Got neck from all of these thoughts, I sex. Rastafari, I shot us, yes. High safari, me casa, yes. Poppy field of that papa. She came to party, she popped the molly, said come to papa, she said papa, yes.
I got that I got that goddamn. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man. Pimp slapping, toe tagging. I'm just trying to fight the man. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man.
All right, welcome back to Hill News Radio on KSLU. I'm Bobby Baird.
I'm Joey Duggan.
So Joey, let's talk like news, local news. What's going on?
Let's see, Bobby.
Hey, the Film Fest. St. Lawrence
right.
Film Fest. Come on.
That seems to be all over campus lately. I've been hearing a lot of hubbaloo about different people who are interested in going to see various events between here, Potsdam, and even Montreal and Ottawa, if I
Brockville.
Understand.
Brockville, yeah.
Brockville.
Joey, did you know that registration is free?
I did know that, actually, but that is an exciting fact about this groundbreaking International Film Fest.
Oh, absolutely. And there's just so many great events. Tito Puente's band is playing, and they have a documentary about him. It's called For the Love of Mambo. And you familiar with Tito Puente?
I am not.
Oye, como va mi ritmo? You know,
oh, yeah.
The classic. It's a classic. So be sure to check that out. As far as other local news goes, this weekend on St. Lawrence campus, we got a few hockey games, as we mentioned earlier in the show. We also have a Java show, correct?
We do. Harsh Armadillo will be at the barn on Saturday night.
Now that's a hell of a name, Harsh Armadillo.
It is. And actually, interesting story about Harsh Armadillo. The Outing Club has been fascinated with their music for some time now and has been pestering every booking agent for the past couple years to book them. And finally, Steve Yardley has heeded the advice of the Outing Club and booked Harsh Armadillo. So I think there will be a lot of people within the theme house community and even within the entire St. Lawrence community who will be very excited to see this band play at the barn.
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Carly Baldwin, who introduced me to Harsh Armadillo at the beginning of this year. And she was telling me, Bobby, check out this band. They're so good. And now she's just ecstatic that they're coming this weekend.
We love to hear that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. All right, so we'll close off the show. Once again, I'm Bobby Baird.
I'm Joey Duggan.
And this has been Hill News Radio on KSLU.